welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone? And welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to evangelists, founders, and leaders, and we get their insights as to how they not only scale up themselves, but also scale up their businesses. And very, very excited to have Kimo on the show today. Kimo is the founder of Income Marketplace. And prior to that, he's led a number of different ventures as an entrepreneur and been very successful, and has also holds current positions as an advisory board member. So, you know, welcome today, mate, and looking forward to the show.
Cool. Thank you, Richard. Very nice to be here.
Cool. So, you know, before we kick off on the show, just to let everyone know, my book is out now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. If you want to get your free copy, go to my website, www.scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up, and you can get your copy or drop me an email at richard@scaleupconsulting.co, and I'll send you through some details. Okay, so let's crack on with today. Today, we are going to be going into some detail as to, you know, what sacrifices you as an executive, as a founder, need to make as you grow and scale your business. And we'll also dive into what it takes to go through the different phases in scaling up your business. What it's when you shift gears from build to scale, what does that look like? What does it feel like? And also, what does it take to actually do that? So super excited to have you in the chair today, Kimo, because I know you've been through this. You're also obviously going through it right now, well, partly with your current venture. But as we kick off today's show, I'd love to know, I mean, you're an experienced entrepreneur. You've done this gig a few times. So what made you wake up one morning and go, hey, I want to start a new company? Can you sort of explain that to me, please?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that entrepreneurial spirit. You know, I never really, after my few ventures, or, you know, basically when I got out of school and then started my first venture, after that, I've never really thought of myself as being employed as such. So I think it came quite naturally to me after my last venture that I will just start something new. I didn't know, of course, at that time I quit my, or exited my previous venture at the start of 2020, just before COVID hit. And then effectively took me like 6 months watching Shark Tank, trying to figure out ideas, you know, what to do next. I had some crazy ideas there, like totally non-fintech related. Gym gear for old people and stuff.
That's so, pretty good. Yeah, you know. Someone take that idea.
exactly. You know. So anyway, and then just things happened, and the idea came that, hey, this is income. You know, I can combine the things that I've learned in my career. I'm also investing myself in loans. I was investing before already. I knew the asset class. So for those who don't know, getincome.com is what we're building. It's a investment platform where you can invest in loans. And that means effectively you are putting money into loans originated by international companies that list them on our platform. And then you earn fixed income of between 7 and 12% per annum. So that's my fintech background. I knew the business. I knew everything in the field. So I thought, hey, this is an interesting opportunity. I'll start building something like this. And then from June 2020, when we actually collected the first funding and started building this, everything moved very fast. And by February 2021, we were already live. So yeah, it wasn't a conscious decision. It just happened once again.
Nice. And a lot of times I talk to either clients or guys, girls on the show, and others outside of the show and outside of sort of my network. And people talk about ideas, right? I come up with, you know, there's lots of ideas. Ideas are a dime a dozen. But I always say you've got to go out there and execute. And only in execution, you'll find out whether that idea is actually worth anything to anyone, right? So how did you make that leap from idea? You know, okay, I know the industry, I know there's a problem, I've got this idea. How did you make that leap from idea to actually execution? And now, you know, now there's actually some traction.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing obviously is, like you said, you know, you have an idea and then you need to decide, will I start building this or will I not? And usually, I think I mentioned it before as well to you when we spoke before this, was that the forecast or the projections of the business, how it's going to go, They're just absurd. So as an entrepreneur, when you start, you think that this is going to fly like nothing before. And then, you know, you start building it and you realize that nothing holds. You know, all your growth projections are, you know, they're just projections. They have nothing to do with reality. But I guess, you know, if you don't have that crazy belief in your idea, then you will not start executing. You know, so that's the first thing you say, okay, I'm going to make money on this or whatever is your motivation. You know, I'm going to build a great business. I'm going to help mankind, whatever it is. And then comes the fact that you started. And then once you started on that journey, then you generally don't want to give up also. So, and then you keep pushing, even if you realize that, hey, the projections are not what you were expecting, but you're still growing. So you kind of see the light all the time. You know that you're building a good thing. And then you put that aside that, okay, my early idea was wrong, but I know I'm building a good thing. So you keep on pushing. So kind of out of necessity in a way, because there's no way back for an entrepreneur. And then when you start really seeing the early stages of traction, then you know that you're onto something, right? Like I think you nicely put it that there's a building phase and then perhaps there's a traction phase and then scaling phase. And all of those have kind of different approaches. So I think today we are at the end of traction phase. We are hitting scaling phase in the new venture. We saw like 42% growth in January, month on month. So we've kind of proven that this thing will fly.
That's good. And, you know, as you walk through you've had multiple businesses, right? And, you know, this is not your first rodeo. I guess what I'm looking at here is, as you go through these different phases and different businesses, what sacrifices do you personally have to make when you start a business, when you build a business, when you try and go through that traction phase, when you start to scale a business? What are the personal sacrifices, maybe is the question, the personal sacrifices that you have to make on that journey?
Yep. I think it's obviously the kind of work-life balance is the first victim, especially when you're in the building phase. And that, of course, depends a lot on, you know, do you have a family, you know, how friends, other things, how active are you socially? Usually, at least in my experience, in the building phase, those need to go to the backdrop in a way, because you're so focused and that needs the time and it needs all of that energy you have to actually push something, a venture to start. Is it fundraising? Is it figuring out the problems, figuring out the team? So definitely the personal life suffers, family relationships suffer. And then of course, then that's building phase for sure. Scaling phase depends on, I mean, my experience was that as a very active CEO in the previous business, even if we had 200 employees, I was running like never before. And that's probably something that I did wrong in there, or not necessarily wrong. That was just my style. I wanted to be hands-on. We had a great team. We had everything going, but I still was involved like, you know, daily heavily. And when you're in building phase, that's needed. But now at least, you know, I'm a bit older now as well than before. So I think about it this way, that I need to build a team that knows what they're doing, that takes part of that responsibility of the founders back in that sense that they are. And that's the key to smart scaling, I think, if you think about it. Otherwise, you will just burn out. Hasn't happened to me, but in general, it's a very likely outcome if you try to do everything yourself.
Because there's, I mean, I get it, right? There is a view that you have to focus, you know, in the build, but let's just focus on that. Actually, you know, in business in general, that you have to focus on what you're doing and where you are and where you need to get to. You know, there's a lot of, especially in that build phase, there's a lot of time and effort that you have to pour in. But I do feel that you don't have to let things go by, things outside of the business go by the wayside, right? So you can, if you want, have 4 weeks in a French beach town, but you can also be working. You can also be very productive, but you can be with your family. You can incorporate different parts of life into that part of your life and that part of your journey, because like the journey is also part of the process, right? So you may as well, in my view, you may as well try and have a bit of fun and incorporate other parts of your life into that journey so you can get the most out of it, right? And at the end of that, you know, see what happens, and you can always improve if you need to improve. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Taking breaks, of course, super important. Even if you're in the build phase, if you have the means to it, you know, I'm already quite far in my career in that sense. Yeah. So I'm probably a lucky founder in that sense that I don't need to really consider juggling between a day job and building something, so I can have the focus here. But yeah, sure, it's still important that you take time to yourself. And that's where it comes to kind of the technology is also a great blessing, but it's also a great curse for an entrepreneur. So, you know, I these days I do take time off. You know, I just say that, hey, these days I'm not available, you know, if I go ski or whatever, just to get those few days. Generally, of course, if I travel, I'm always available. Yeah. And that's kind of where you need to figure out what's right for you. You know, you should take probably at least Saturdays off. So that's what I started doing after the previous venture, that, you know, just to say that if I don't really have anything important, then my calendar for Saturdays is for family and for recharging. So you can find the balance, but when you're really building and you really want to do that, you know, get to that scaling phase fast or get to the traction phase fast, then this is something that people easily neglect. But I agree, balance can be found and should be found.
Because, you know, I do encounter it. It is this feeling that you have to be on it 24/7, right? And yeah. I don't know, the people that I encounter, actually the most successful entrepreneurs I encounter, they are on it. No doubt they are on it. But, you know, 24/7, crush it culture, I don't think they are. And I think it's more about quality than quantity, right? When they are on it, they are on it 100% and they're giving it their all. And when they aren't, they're relaxing, they're recharging, and they're getting ready to go again. So they're not sacrificing life just for one part or one tenth of what life is going to give us, right?
Yeah, it's somebody said that, you know, if you keep on pushing, you're like a phone charging from 2 to 5%, right? So you're at 2%, you take the Saturday off, you get to 5%.
Yeah.
But you know, how far is that gonna take you? So absolutely. I'm really bad at it to take breaks. Just I guess, you know, I'm so used to working, so maybe I'm not a good role model in that. But surely, yeah. You need to scale smartly. And I think that's what, you know, what I mentioned also is that, you know, having a team that supports you, having people who do it, is it a co-founder to share the burden? That's super important because, you know, those times when you really feel like, you know, that you're tired, to have somebody to pick up the ball or carry the torch, you know, that enables you to kind of, you know, I'm lucky to have a good co-founder here also in that sense that that helps.
And you mentioned team, you mentioned co-founder, and what do you believe the benefits are of getting that sort of that early stage help, whether it's a co-founder, whether it's a coach, whether it's building that team early on that gives you that support, that internal support to help you sort of, you know, scale up and grow up?
Well, I think, you know, if you're a founder starting it, like, for example, a good example is funding, right? So we're fundraising at the moment. So we're connecting with different VCs, you know, and basically trying to put that thing together. It looks positive, but I think, you know, if we would have started from an incubator, for example, and already built those contacts at start, you know, you have a lot of these sort of tech hubs, you know. So if you're building a fintech business, and you know what I would do these days differently, I would definitely locate to a tech hub instead of a dedicated office the first. because that's where you make the contacts. That's where you maybe find your CTO. That's where you might, and you know, the, if you think of costs, even if the rent is a little bit higher, you're going to make it up with the contacts. You're going to meet up those early stage angels. You're going to meet up those advisors, mentors, or others that can give you guidance on, and especially as a first time founder, give you guidance on, you know, what are the pitfalls that you shouldn't do, starting from, you know, funding to building a team to finding the right people.
And you've mentioned TechHub. What is, just for the listeners out there that may not have heard of this, but where can you find these TechHubs?
Well, I mean, what TechHubs, generally co-working spaces for startups, simply put. So, you know, Lyft 99 in Estonia, for example, there's a lot of different types of startups there. Lyft 99 organizes the Estonian Startup Awards. They bring together the community, the VCs, the angels, the entrepreneurs. They kind of mingle in that space. And I think that can be a very powerful place to start to get those connections. So I think any country, Canary Wharf probably in London is something where you would find these kind of spaces. That's where Revolut started from, I think. So.
Yeah, level 39, right? So, yeah. That's the one. And, you know, as you're going through those different phrases that we mentioned, those the build, the traction, and then the scale, I mean, what are the realities of actually making the leap from build to traction, then from traction to scale? What needs to take place actually in each of those phases for you to make the leap to the next phase?
Yeah, I think, I mean, build is obviously when you, at least to me, and probably different entrepreneurs and different products have different phases, but build for us was definitely trying to get the business live. So, you know, to be able to onboard the first customer. And then once we got the, once we had that desktop set up, gettingcome.com was live, you know, and we could actually start advertising, trying to test different things, then that's where we started the early stage of the traction phase. And I think traction phase to me means that you are trying to figure out what are the right channels for the customers to come in, or users, or however you call them, investors. And then from once you figured those things out, then you reach the, you know, the famous product market fit. And then that takes you to scaling phase. So I think, you know, and scaling meaning to us, obviously, that you can just add one user on top of one another, and you can pretty much predict what's your cost of acquisition and what's your lifetime value of your customer. And then, you know, you can say that if for every €1 I put in, I earn actually three, you know, or €1 that I put into marketing or whatever. And that's the kind of the super classic metric of VCs, I guess, in that sense that if you pour money into marketing, the business will grow and you can grow it, scale it in a predictable way. So first thing needs to happen, you need to have a product, right? Then you're out of the building phase. For traction, you need to figure out things. You need to talk with your customers or users. You need to figure out what they really want and to see that if the product really is actually something that has a demand in the market. So we knew there's other companies like what we started building. So we took a little bit of a different approach to that. But there was really no way to, you know, to build a minimum viable product as such for us. Because, you know, if you build such an investment platform, you can't build just the front end or you can't build just the back end. You really need to build a full product. So we did quite a bit of development on the product itself to get out of that build phase. And then we needed to figure out, well, you know, will the investors actually come? And well, luckily they did. And now we're quite close to scaling phase that we're figuring out already what are the best channels for us to grow and so forth.
I guess part of this is also making certain that, you know, during each part of these three steps is making certain you build a brand that people are going to be familiar with, right? And also that stands out from the crowd. And I always like to say to people that you start building your brand early on, right? You build that leadership, that thought leadership. So you start getting followers, whatever those followers are. They might be VCs, they might be potential customers, they might be actually paying customers, which will be great in the early days. And you also then need to also take a look at the relationships, right? Because part of branding is making certain you have a good public and you have a relationship with that public and consistently start communicating to that public, right? So you have what I like to call the LRC triangle, leadership, relationship, and communication, which builds affinity to your public, right? And your public being everyone, right? Everyone, such as VCs, prospects, customers, employees, potential employees, etc., right?
Yeah, true. Actually, a lot of businesses these days, they start this way, that they actually, they put the website out, they start drum banging the drum, and then in effect, they don't still have yet anything, but the website is up, they're starting actually this from there. And you can see like, then some companies even go to beta before they really launch. So basically they're testing it on and just trying to build that community and these early adopters as early as possible. This was something that we also neglected or we didn't do. Something that I think we should have done to open a beta access to really, you know, start building a community, start building those connections early on. So I think that's a very good point. It's kind of like before you start a business, think a bit ahead, like where do you take your office? Yeah. Should I open up my social media profile and, you know, start, even if it's LinkedIn, to start connecting with people already, that might be useful. Because probably when you actually start the business, at least what happened to me was in build phase, I was quite active on LinkedIn and I thought that was a great channel to meet people and to get an audience. But then when you're in build phase, then it's very time consuming still to kind of even to do these little things. So the traction is better spent when you have time, I mean, to get that traction in those media channels.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned one thing around community, and I find it's quite it's an essential ingredient, right? Especially, I don't want to say especially in the early days, I think all the time, because this community they're your bread and butter, right? They're the people that can test new products, they're the people that might invest first, they're the people that might buy the product first. So starting it early on and building a community of 5, 10, all of a sudden, you know, maybe in a year's time or 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, it goes to 1,000 or 2,000 or 10,000. Those people are, although that those people are going to be the people that are going to spread the word, right? So the earlier you start, the better.
Yeah, they say 1,000, you know, race for the 1,000 users, and then that's enough to start some sort of a network, you know, kind of a referral effect ongoing. Yeah. What we do is obviously we have like Telegram chats where actually people can join, they can chat with me, they can chat with the team, and they can also tell us if something's broken or if something's, because, you know, we're working well, everything works on the background, but you still every now and then get bugs. So we also did a bug hunt program where we just said to the community and to the people that, hey, if you find a bug, report it to us and we give you 20 euros or 50 euros at start it was. So quite a good bonus for giving us the information if something's broken. But at the same time, you're kind of defusing the anger that the users might have, because the community in a way starts looking at, well, hey, we'll hunt for the bugs, I'll get some cash, and actually I kind of like what these guys are doing.
Instead of
going to a forum and saying, hey, this service is crap, then they'd rather
engage in the community, right?
Yep, correct.
I like it. And Telegram, so that's interesting. So it's responsive as well. From a support perspective, you're responding directly to your customers' complaints in real time rather than log it onto a channel and then it will get picked up in 24 hours, right?
Yep. And that's actually quite interesting because, I mean, in Telegram now, myself as a founder, I'm there, you know, answering to people. And so I get direct feedback on the product. Our operations and product guy gets direct feedback on the product. The only thing is, of course, it's a bit niche, but we're not the only investment platform using it as a channel as such. So it's a bit niche. You know, if I look at the amount of messages coming from traditional channels to that, but we are trying to promote it also that, hey, it's actually the best way to directly communicate with the team and CEO and founder. And, you know, you get your thoughts out, we answer. So it's definitely something that really works well.
Awesome. Just out of interest, how long have you been using that for?
I think we set it up about a few months back, which is really cool. I mean, we only have like 150 people there, but they are pretty engaged, you know, and now we see new users coming in as well. And they're asking, hey, what do you think about the product? You know, should I invest here? And then, you know, the other guys are saying, hey, this is a cool product, and they have a pretty nice approach to things. And then, you know, that's how you slowly build it.
Nice. I like it. Okay. So listen, as we come up to finishing this part of the podcast off, and we go into the flash round, what are the three bits of advice you would want to give to yourself starting your first journey into the entrepreneurial world? What are the three things that you think would help you jump over those obstacles quicker?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And times have changed, right? So when we started, just as a backdrop, we started 2004, the first venture. You know, fintech was not called fintech back then. It was just online, you know, whatever. So I guess, you know, these days I would say that focus on the product early, spec it well, have good developers, because a good developer saves time and money, both, even if they seem to be expensive. Data, definitely. Make sure that the data is collected well. And then spend time on reporting. I mean, these are like the, you know, if I leave the normal ones, figure out your funding, because that's kind of traditional, what everybody says, yeah. Always fundraise and so forth. But definitely, I think meaningful reports are the eyes to the business.
Reports showing whether you expanding or contracting. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. To see actually, like, are you growing? Are you not? Are you churning too many customers? Whatever there is. I think like back in 2004 when we started was more like we saved all the data, but we didn't really pull it out. Yeah. So it's just as good as being blind. Luckily, the market was going up and everything went well. But these days, definitely, that was the first things we set up was a proper data and not the best reports, but meaningful reports, though. So maybe that's the evolution.
And how, you know, I always like to say to my clients, have a start of week and have an end of week. And at the end of week, take some time to walk through all your data and then plan for the upcoming week. And then do that on a monthly basis, a quarterly basis, and a yearly basis. So, you know, what cycle? Do you follow the same sort of cycle or is it slightly different?
I do weekly reports.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we have a daily report coming, obviously showing, but that's kind of like, you know, that doesn't give you, it gives you some trend, but I think week is meaningful enough in our business. Great. So weekly is definitely the one that I find meaningful. We have a weekly town hall with the team where we go through it. And so effectively 52 weeks and 52 cycles in that sense in a year. And then we do monthly kind of a bigger overview with stakeholders as well. And then, yeah, quarterly, well, that's just putting the same data into, you know, quarterly format. So, but yeah, weekly is a very good metric.
Yeah, cool. I like it. Okay. And now we go into the flash round. As I said earlier on offline, the flash round is a bit of fun. I ask you three questions, one word answers, yes or no, or you can't say, Richard, I don't like you, by the way.
Well, depends on the question.
Yeah. And then I give you the mic and you ask me a question. So here we go. So first one for you. Do you like thinking out the box or are you more of a structured or methodical thinker?
Out the box.
Nice. The conventional way of doing stuff or the unconventional way of doing stuff?
Conventional way of doing stuff.
Okay. Now this next one. If you have a team and they're listening, this is the big one. What is the key to growth? Investment in yourself or investment in your team?
Investment in your team.
Yeah, there we go. That was easy, wasn't it?
That was okay. Very easy.
Yeah. So there we go. So now I give you the mic and you can ask me any question. I've given you 45 minutes to come up with one. So there we go.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if it's a one word answer, but what's the best thing doing a podcast such as this gives you?
Oh, that is the relationships.
Okay. Well, that was easy.
Yeah, there we go. It is the relationships and the community that I've built off the back of the podcast. So absolutely fantastic to meet guys like yourself and girls all across the world and to get insights of how you run a business. And then the fantastic relationship, because after this, ultimately we're in a little community and we always link up together And there's networking across purposes here. So yeah, I'd say the relationships and cool. It's been brilliant.
No, cool. That's super. You know, that's one thing just to follow up on that. One thing I failed in my previous businesses is probably the networking part. I kind of didn't really think of it as that important. I was so focused on building the business that I kind of said, oh, you know, there's an event. I'm not going to go there because I don't have the time. But now actually knowing, I think my journey would have been kind of faster started on this business if I would have had a bit bigger network. But it's never too late to start, right?
So yeah, never too late to start, right? Never ever too late. So now you're part of this community. So there you go.
Awesome. Very good.
Okay. And listen, mate, it's been absolutely amazing having you on the show. So I loved it. Loved getting the insights as to, you know, what it takes to build, you know, also go through the traction phase and the scale up phase in your business. And also as you go through that, think that it's not always 24/7 crush it. You can do it the way you want to do it. You don't have to do it the way that, you know, it is in the press. So awesome getting the insights from you. Loved it. And looking forward to your continued success this year.
All right. Thank you, Richard. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. And everyone, again, as we log off on today's show, if you want to get a free copy of my new book that's out, drop me a note at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Or go to my website, www.scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. And look forward to talking to you all next week. Cheers.